It's in my repertoire. Every single bar is hard. Spitting fire like I'm the human version of Charizard. Welcome to the Trash Avalanche Podcast. Today is April 2nd. We are a few days out of EUIC, the third biggest tournament of the season. I am Mike Fouché. I am here today with just Liam. Brent is out. Caden is out. Cam is flying to EUIC right now. So it's just us two. We're going to yap a little bit about some of our thoughts on the metagame. But before we get to that, Liam is coming off a very solid top 32 finish at the last regional in the previous format. Liam.
Indeed. Yeah. Start with that. Super quick recap. I went 10-4-1 total. I guess I'll go round by round. First round, I hit Goldengo. I was feeling.
You played Maridon, right?
I did. I played Maridon. I played the same 59 as Charlie Lockyer. I played a Raihan instead of the fourth Ultra Ball. And probably like half my losses across the entire tournament was opening Raihan and a completely dead hand. So, you know, really goes to show you how much damage cutting consistency does to a tournament run. Pretty brutal. But yeah, getting into the rounds, I guess. The first round, I hit Goldengo. I lost the first one after throwing game on board. I thought I had to power up a Maridon to take a knockout, but I forgot I could just power up the Raichu, and it only needed two energy, so I didn't have to hit off Generator the next turn. And then I whiffed off Generator, and I lost, but I won the next two, so that was fine. Round two, I lost to Moon. I bricked twice. Round three and round four, I hit Mew, and I went 4-0 against them, which I was feeling pretty good about because, you know, a big decision was whether or not we play Spiritomb, and we decided not to. And I went 4-0 against Mew in, like, the first four rounds. That's pretty good. Round five, I hit Guardi. I announced Amp, like, five times in 15 minutes. That was a really, really nice round. Round six, I hit Urshi, and Urshi's not a great matchup, but you can win it if things go your way. Things did not go my way. I missed on some generators. Rough stuff. Round seven, I hit Moon. Things went my way. I hit generators. Round eight, I hit Moon. Things went my way. I hit generators. Round nine was an interesting decision. I hit Rowan Stavenow, who was playing Guardi, which is...
So you're 6-2 at this point, right?
Yes, I'm 6-2. I hit Rowan Stavenow playing Guardi. This is one of my better matchups, but I look at my opening hand game one, and I'm going to lose game one. But this puts me in a weird spot. However, I look back, and I think that was the right decision. Rowan's a very good player. I don't think I had great chances in game two and game three, even though the matchup was super good. You know, I put it at maybe 70-30. This means I'm unfavored. And I don't even know if it's 70-30 into a player like Rowan. I haven't tested against a player like Rowan extensively. Rowan just got finished beating up on Cam, who was playing, you know, Maridon as well. He had a list error, or like submitted the wrong deck list, so it wasn't exactly the same list. But, you know, he just beat the guy who was on Maridon with me. And so I was not super, super stoked about my chances. I also want to see Rowan do well. So, you know, IDing gets us both into day two. Rowan's super chill. So I think it was a solid ID.
So
definitely
so was
my
it,
entire tournament, though.
What, so before we go on, so the ID, was it you looked at your opening hand and then you offered the ID? Or like, how, yeah, okay. Did he offer it first before you guys set up? No?
No.
Okay.
I think he made a joke about offering it. He was like, I'm not even going to offer you the ID.
Because you guys both knew what each other were playing.
Yeah, so we had talked about his ID strat with Murad, and he was like, dude, even if I get game one, you know, there's a chance I ID, blah, 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 blah. We'd been talking about IDing potentially, I guess. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I, of course, as always, made clear to him, I'm not IDing at 6-2.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
But then I ended up IDing at 6-2.
Yeah, I mean, it seems reasonable. I've been in the seat of Rowan before, like having a very unfavorable matchup and then like actually playing out game one and winning game one in a very unfavorable and then offering the ID or I forget exactly how it worked in my instance of like me offering the ID again or maybe they offered it to me. Yeah. And you know, even being up a game, I took it because like from my perspective, it was like, I think it was like a 20-80 matchup, like the odds of me winning.
Yeah.
both or even one of the next two games was less than 50-50. So, and I think the Maraidon Guardi matchup, like in your case, is actually closer than the matchup I was. Like I was playing Excelgor Wubbuffet into Trevenant. Like that was really bad. So I understand from both perspectives there.
Yeah, and I had offered it. Rowan actually showed me his hand after. His hand was pretty bad as well. I didn't feel too bad about it though, because my hand was even worse. Like my hand was literally, it was like Zapdos boss 5 energy. That was like my opening 7. Yeah. He had like Routes level ball.
That's gonna win him the game in that spot.
It was like Routes level ball and nothing. But he also had like started the Jirachi, so he was like guaranteed not getting Mirage Step. So he wasn't getting like a good Routes level ball. He was getting like, I'm gonna get refinement next turn and draw 2 cards. Routes level ball, but that was better than my hand. My hand was terrible. So yeah, I think it was definitely a good idea on his end. I don't know if it was a great idea on my end, but it wasn't a bad idea. It definitely wasn't the same level of, you know, criminal activities that many 6-2 IDers engage in every regional.
And another component of it is Vancouver was much smaller. So like maybe if you're in your spot in Orlando when there's 2,500 people, maybe you don't take the ID at that point. Maybe you're just like, ah, let's just go for winning games 2 and 3.
Yeah, yeah.
That plays into it for sure.
Yeah, there's a lot of factors that make the ID a little bit better in my situation.
Cool. All right, so you go 6-2-1. And we know what happens to Rowan. Rowan goes, whatever, 6-0 and 5-0-1 and makes cut.
I listened to Rowan's podcast earlier this week, and he actually had a really interesting strategy that it makes a lot of sense, of course, but he was basically like, I was planning on taking like an ID round 1 because like 6-2-1 was filled with Maraidons, like the whole bracket. And I mean, you know, bracket dodging is not like something that's usually very high on your radar or like high on your priorities list. But what's really interesting about that idea is like you have to go 5-0-1 anyway. And like, so the tie coming at the end is like, or like the tie doesn't really come at like a lot of points in between. Like you usually think of it as like 5-0 and then ID. But, you know, going ID and then 5-0 is like kind of the same thing, if not a little easier. So I thought that was a really, really interesting idea.
Did he do that or he?
Yeah, he did.
Oh, he did.
Okay. Well, he ended up not wanting to ID, but he got into a situation where he could play for a tie because he's playing Gardevoir and it was a Gardevoir. And he was like, I'm just going to play for the tie here.
Okay. Makes sense.
But yeah, back to my tournament run really quick. I went 4-2 day 2, but I was out of the event really fast. I lost a round to Tina that I somewhat missed about. It was some pretty bad draws. There was maybe something I could do game 2, but game 3 I actually like lost completely by force. I opened without a single playable card and got turn 2 lost impacted. So yeah, that round did not go my way, and that basically like cooked my entire tournament because I came at x2-1. Then the second loss that I took was to a Snorlax, and that was solely due to a misplay. I'd actually been drawing like red hot the entire set. I somehow had avoided drawing into my Mareep. My Squawk, the sisters were not hitting, like everything was going right. And on like one of the later turns, I got Avery'd and I decided to preserve some energy and I dropped off the Mew EX. And that ended up being like a really bad mistake. I got Iono'd. And if I found a switch that turn, I would have won. I did not find a switch that turn because I didn't have the Mew. So I basically just drew past and then gave him enough time to set up like a much stronger board involving Mimikyu. So yeah, that was like a pivotal mistake in my day 2 run. But other than that, everything went pretty well. Drew pretty hot, hit the generators. Maraidon.
And turns out it was a very good play for the event.
Yes.
You won, it got top 8. You played basically the same list as Charlie. Was there any other people playing? Well, you and Cam and Charlie, anybody else playing your guys?
And Jake Santiago as well, who went 5-3-1.
Okay.
It was and what two happened 5-3-1s. With
Cam started like 4 or 5-0, right?
Yeah, he started off like 5-1 and then lost 2 in a row to 5-3-1.
Dang.
The rough stuff. Oh, I guess one other interesting situation that I guess I like your input on as well that I was put in my round 15 match against Travis. I I had an advantage. I was going to hit the first two prize KO. I had a Peony, and I was grabbing Switch to get into this Maridon that I already fully powered up, and I was deciding on the next card. And, yeah, so this was on turn two, and as you can tell, my start's going really, really well. I already have a fully powered up Maridon before the Peony, and I'm grabbing Switch to get into it. There's an Iron Hands in the active, and it has a DTE, but his last turn, he went Nestball Maridon for, like, Zapdos Mareep to get two one-prizers, right? But he made a mistake because he thought he prized the second Maridon EX. So he didn't grab a second Maridon EX, which left him open for me grabbing Catcher. And that's the play that I went for. I was like, I'm going to go for the Catcher and chase down the Maridon EX because he also generated two energy to it the turn before on turn one. So I was like, there's a lot of investment in this Maridon. If I hit the Maridon here, something like Peony suddenly gets into a really awkward spot where he has to choose between the Mew EX and, like, he can't grab, like, Mew EX generator to power up this Maridon. Like, I basically just, you know, cook any chance of hitting a counterattack and, like, basically win the game on the spot. However, that's obviously only a 50% chance. And, like, the way the Maridon mirror works is, like, if you take the first KO, as long as you stream two more attacks in a row, you just always win, right? So, like, the other choices I could have grabbed were, like, XP share to try and bump my chances of hitting an attack the next turn, which presents, like, this, like, really, really weird calculation that I was trying to do, which is, like, what are the chances that how much does, like, grabbing XP share bump my chances of hitting three attacks in a row? Because that's completely winning compared to this, like, 50% chance to basically win on the spot. And then the other upside of grabbing the Catcher is it thins the Catcher from the deck. Like, the Catcher is a bad card to draw, whereas the XP share is, like, a wonderful card to draw basically at every point in the game. So, yeah, those were, like, the thoughts that were running through my mind, and I couldn't really, you know, it's hard to quickly calculate those.
So what'd you do?
I ended up grabbing the Catcher, and then I lost because I whiffed, like, two generators in a row the next turn.
You didn't hit the Catcher?
I didn't hit the Catcher, and then I like, double whiffed on generators. It was like the 1% doomsday scenario that I ended up losing that game.
You still won the set, right?
I did. Travis actually made a mistake in game three. He would have taken the first two prize KO, but he peonied and then Town Sword to thin the deck, like, with the idea of just being thinning before Mew. But one of his Peony grabs was an Ultra Ball, and he was basically committing to Flaffy, but he also needed to hit an attachment. So he was basically just short a card, and he had to hold off on the Town Store so he could add a card to his hand afterwards.
Yeah.
And he ended up missing attack, and then I hit the first two press KO. I just closed out the game. That game was actually, like, really, really funky. In game three, he got one energy off his first three generators, and he prized the fourth one. So yeah, he had to end up doing this, like, crazy Flaffy shenanigans to try to get his first attack off on turn two. And I would have absolutely smoked him on my turn two but I prized double Mew EX Flaffy Sealstone. So yeah, I basically peonied, and my whole deck, like, fell apart into that. Like, I didn't really have, like, great continuation off of Peony to hit attacks, which was, like, a really, really weird spot. That was a funky game. But yeah.
Cool. Well, congrats. Top 32 is great. You got a top 16 and a top 32 now out of, what, like, four tournaments?
Yeah. Yeah. And yep. Then I had, like, two top 5-12s.
yeah, whatever. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I'm just saying, like, a top 16, top 32 in four tournaments is really good. So
yeah, I think I've been to a few, maybe like one more, but I think it's like five.
Okay. Yeah. Sure. Cool. Well, that format is over. Maridon is, I think, unplayable now. We do have kind of its spiritual successor that we'll get to in a few minutes. Liam and I are not going to EUIC, unfortunately. I have my baby shower this weekend, and Liam is slow on the draw and was not able to register. But we have a bunch of friends that are going, so we've been playing games. We've been talking and whatnot. I've actually played quite a lot on live since the set dropped, so I have thoughts. We figure we will just kind of go through maybe the top five, and then whatever other decks we want to talk about a little bit. give some thoughts where we think the good decks are. So, start off, the obvious one. Gabe Smart's tier list had it as S tier. A lot of tier lists have it as the only S tier deck is Charizard Pidgeot. I've only played a couple games with Charizard. Have you played more with it?
I've played a few. Yeah, it's a really good deck.
Yeah.
It's really good.
I think Poffin was... So Poffin is like an interesting card just to talk about in general. I think some cards got weaker from VIP to Poffin, but I think some decks got stronger, actually. And I, Charizard's like right on the cusp. Like, you can't find the Rotom, but like you get the chance of finding extra Charmanders and extra Pidgey if you need it throughout the game.
I think one of the biggest things that it opens up is it also lets you like go blind first without getting that like massive downside of whiffing.
Right. I think, that's a really good point. Yeah. I was thinking about that. I played more Charizard games today than I have previously. And as I was setting up for like my second game, I was like, I think I just go first now.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. So that's cool. Yeah. The deck just has so many options. Obviously Pidgeot being able to find any card is very strong. The lists are obviously not super different. There's probably like, 53 to 55 core cards. And then people are kind of figuring out like those last five or six. And just like last format, there probably isn't a definitive, last couple cards. There's lots of different things that you could play based on what you expect, like Mist Energy and Eerie. You could just play more consistency. You could play Turo. You could play Palpad. Do you have any like preferences when talking about some of the
Eerie TM Devo? I think it's pretty cool. It's good for Mirror, good for Chen Pao. The Aerie is also good into like Snorlax and Pidgeot. I don't know if it's enough to save you, but it's I certainly when I'm playing Snorlax and Pidgeot, the threat of basically losing all the Palpads in my hand and then like losing the ability to go infinite is like a little bit scary because Charizard doesn't burn a lot of their deck. So like the infinite loop is much lighter in Pidgeot right now. It's like Silene and Palpads completely skipping over Yelchier. Because a lot of matchups you can they go through their deck on their own. So just playing Iono is like enough to win the deck out, even if you can't go infinite. But Charizard is not one of them. So like if you lose your ability to go infinite, I think there's some real threat of like actually losing on deck out.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, Charizard's basically like -2 from their deck every turn where other decks will
they have to dump and draw, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Eerie seems pretty good. It's probably like the only deck besides Stahl that I feel like Eerie is good in because you can search for it, you can use it. So I think it's two things, right? You can search for it, so you can use it, in turns where you don't have another supporter to play meaningfully, much more effectively than other decks. Something like an Arceus Giratina, I've seen it popping up in lists, but it doesn't make nearly as much sense in there to me because like that's a deck that really needs to play Judge or Iono or Boss like every single turn. And like the turn where you don't want to do those, are you really going to have the one of Eerie? I don't know. So I feel like Zard Pidgeot, it makes a lot of sense. And the second thing is it helps probably two of your hardest matchups in Chien Pao.
I think it's a worthwhile option in Arceus. It gives you some interesting options, I guess, to Aerie instead of Judge, and like it's an interesting way to basically wall out like certain combinations of cards, I guess. Like if you're trying to deny like Counter Catcher or Lost Vacuum and like Candy Pidge, Candy Zard, like Aerie's are like a way to somewhat guarantee those, I think, from what I've seen. I can't remember like the exactly how it works, but it's a way to like guarantee misses as opposed to just like judging and praying. Although, Judge is very good.
Here's an interesting question for you then. Just to like as a hypothetical to kind of give a baseline of how good it might be. Let's say you're playing against Charizard. You go first. You get your Arceus attachment. It's in the active. And then Charizard goes. They get, whatever. They get a couple Charmanders. They get a Pidgey. They get a Rotom. They draw three cards, their hands, whatever, like eight-ish cards or so. And then you play Arceus V-Star. you have the option. Like, you have to grab DTE. There,
you're always going for Judge.
But, you think so? Okay.
Yeah.
But you're,
yeah,
you're not trying to, like, rip a candy off that initial.
No, yeah. I think the Aries much better when, like, they miss the Rotom. Like, if they're sitting on, like, four or five cards, okay, you know, Aries, like, the best supporter you can play there.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's fair. Just gives you, like, another option.
But, yeah, Charizard definitely, I think, it slots in the best. It has the least value out of other supporters. It's also the heaviest on Countercatcher, or one of the heaviest decks on Countercatcher in this format. So it gives you the Gust option along with Aerie on the same turn, which is really good into something like Bax, right? Yep. It's like candies, kill the Bax.
Yep. It's I was gonna say, like, I think matchup wise it also makes the most sense, because, like, yes, Chimpao's not a terrible matchup, but, like, it's not one you want to play against all the time. And if you have Eerie, it makes a pretty big difference, or it can make a pretty big difference. And I think Lost Zone stuff is also, like, a little on the harder side for Charizard. So, you know, you snipe a Mirage Gate at some point, really big. Even, like, a Super Rod can be
huge. Yeah. Charizard does, like, a really good job because of the high HP stretching resources and hitting them a little bit more. Right. Matchups like Lost can be really big.
Yeah. So I think, like, the thing with Charizard is it's not like overwhelmingly favored into any deck. It's just, like, good against pretty much everything, and it's just, like, a good, like, inherent deck, right?
Yes, for sure. It basically keeps, like, all of its tools from rotation, and other decks struggle to do that, I think.
Yeah.
Except for, like, Chenpao, which is the other, like, really good deck right now, I think.
Yeah, I'm sure we could talk more about Charizard, but that was a good segue. Let's talk about Chimpao. Chimpao is actually not the second most played deck on Limitless, but it's very close third. But Chimpao is... I posted, like, a quick Twitter thread the other day on Chimpao, on some of, like, the really, like, basic reasons that Chimpao is significantly better than it was before, just at, like, a fundamental level. So go check that out. We'll kind of get a little bit more into the details, I guess, right now. It's probably the deck that I've played the most. I know some of our friends are definitely considering it. I love Cypher. I'm in love with the Cypher, Bibberell, Pokestop, Greninja engine. I think it's really strong. It's really fun to play with, too. An aside is that I've been trying to think of, like, other decks to play that engine in. I haven't figured out anything better than Chimpao, but... Yeah, I mean, I really like the deck. I think it has pretty okay matchups, and just, like, fundamentally is a pretty strong deck as well.
So, you know, I like the Cypher in Muraidon and Turbo Hands. Good for your deck that's playing a lot of energy, and you want to search generators from your deck. It's like a Stinky Peony if you get the stop down or like a Greninja down. And then, it's also pretty cool for, like, locking up games where, like, you can set your top card to, like, energy generator and then draw one with Mew and guaranteed hit generators off that. Codebreakers is, like, one of the funnest cards to play with, I think, from this new set.
Yeah, like, there's just so many cool things you can do. I particularly think that the stop in Chimpao, I think the Pokestop interaction is, like, the strongest part of it, because you can go, like, so many times. One of the issues with Bibberell is that you end up getting in this awkward spot where you have, like, four-ish cards in your hand, and you can either Bibberell for one card, or you can play the Ultra Ball first, but you're always going to, like, discard another key card. Maybe you have, like, one card you don't care about discarding and one card where you're like, what would I discard? But you kind of, like, have to Ultra Ball to draw more cards type of thing. But if you have, like, a Cypher in a hand like that, you can Cypher and then Pokestop. Grab, like, one card that you do need, one card that you don't need. Then you stop them, you get them, you Ultra Ball away. You end up drawing more cards and seeing more cards. So, like, sometimes Cypher gets you exactly what you need. But even in the situations where it's not getting exactly what you need, it's just letting you get through your deck in a more efficient manner, which I think is really cool.
Drawing cards in the right order has always been such, like, an important thing for Chenpao. Like, obviously, one of the big weaknesses people love to meme on is, like, you know, when the stops aren't hitting and, like, you just get the wrong rips off stop. this is like a really nice way to smooth that out. And then, like you said, if you draw cards in the wrong order, it can really clog up your Bibarolls. And like, you're trying to pull off these really large combos, but sometimes they can only be pulled off when you draw things in the right order. Like, you have to find the Pokemon first, and then find the SER and stuff like that. And just, you know, ensuring that the whole deck runs smooth is really nice. And it's also like probably the better consistency, the next best consistency supporter as well. Like, Iona was never that fun to play on turn one with Chenpao. Yeah. If you have like the stop or the ninja, the Codebreakers is the best thing you can ask for.
Yeah. Iona kind of sucks in the deck. Yeah. Like, some people still play it's one, terrible. But yeah, I'd rather just play three Codebreakers.
Yeah, I would never play Iona over a Codebreaker in that deck right now.
So the deck's pretty good. Like, the Charizard matchup is closer than it was before, for sure. Despite Chienpao getting better, it's just like Charizard's just a little more prepared, I think.
It's the max
belt. And it can go first.
The max belt.
The max belt is huge, yeah. And the fact that they want to go first, right, is like a pretty big deal. They're just more consistent going first. So other matchups are also like fine. I don't know. I feel like it doesn't have a ton. It's similar to Charizard in that it doesn't have a ton of like super favorable matchups, but it actually doesn't have like a ton of really bad ones. I think both decks also, like, their stall matchup is not favored, but they both have decent game against stall, actually. And especially if Chienpao plays the Iron Bundle, it's like particularly good against Pidgeot control.
Yeah, I don't think any Pidgeot player should be playing Snorlax right now. It should just be all Mawile. But yeah, if they do play Snorlax, the bundle, I guess, is good.
Yeah. And that's just, I guess, the only other thing I wanted to mention. Obviously, you play Prime Catcher. That card is very good. So we have had discussions of playing a different Ace spec in Chienpao. But you need to play at least one other Gust card. Most people have opted for Counter Catcher. Some people have been playing Boss. I personally prefer the Iron Bundle right now. It is searchable throughout the game with Nest Balls and Irida, and it's reusable. And I've been playing 3 Super Rod. A lot of the lists I've been seeing recently have been playing 3 Super Rod, so you get to use it 1, 2, 3 times a game if it's actually important. And like, most of the time, like, pushing the active is equivalent to choosing your Gust target.
It's hard to create multiple targets that aren't good for Chienpao.
Right, because you either have Chienpao, which can take a one shot, or you have Iron Hands, which can take two prizes against the little guys. So yeah, exactly. It's really hard to like a good example of something that would be annoying is like attacking or having two of the attacking Snorlax out. Yeah. Like, that would be annoying, but like, no deck is playing that. So I think the bundle is quite good. I wouldn't be surprised if that's like the best other Gust card in a lot of the Chienpaos that do well at EUSC.
Yeah. Countercatcher and Boss are bad. Yeah. Boss more so.
All right, Liam, without looking at Play Limitless, do you know what the actual second most played deck is?
It's Future Hands.
Future Hands.
Yeah, it's super inflated. It's bad.
Yeah, it's like 10% on Play Limitless. I would expect probably more closer to like 6-7% at a UIC. Like, that's the only one that I look at, and I'm immediately like, that's going to be lower.
Yeah. I really like Future Hands because it's I think a lot of good players are counting on the Future Hands players being bad. And in that sense, I like to punish that. But yeah, the deck is trash. The deck's trash. There's a reason the good players aren't going to play. It is absolutely miserable to play.
I haven't played it much myself, but like, playing against it, I either feel like I get rolled pretty hard or I roll them pretty hard, and there's usually not a whole lot of in between.
Yeah, no, it's, and the unlike Maridon, like, the deck is more limited than Maridon, which, like, you know, I kind of disagree, but people are like, oh, that's like the beatdown deck last format. This deck is like, it is absolutely brutal because you have to lead the baby Maridon every game, and you're trying to 2-2-2 race. Like, you're just praying to God that they do not take two prizes on turn two, and that feeling is terrible. It's also hard to keep all of your energy in play. Like, once again, you spend the entire mid-game praying to God that they do not run vacuum, because you just lose if you get all your energy removed like that, unless you rip, like, the most insane generators in a row. Like, back to back, and like the Dex engine is no good. There's no good way to search out generators. You have to literally just draw the nuts if you don't get baton value.
And I think that's like it's matchup against Charizard is pretty abysmal from what I've seen. So so if Charizard's the best deck, like, it doesn't really matter how good your other matchup.
The deck doesn't have a way to get through a Zard. It's just
doesn't anything. And Zard is like the one deck that is 100% going to play a vacuum.
Yes.
They basically play five vacuums and the Pidgeot, right? So
play a bunch of counter catchers on a bunch of counter catcher. That's actually one interesting idea for Zard that I was thinking about, which, I mean, like, I don't know why you'd ever care about this Chen Pao matchup, but it also improves your stall matchup, which is basically just play four Heat Tackle, with the idea being that if they drop like an Iron Crown or something, they shouldn't, they don't need it, but like, you make it easier for the baby Maraidon to kill a Charmander, like, if they attach a future boost or something so that they can prepare retreat, because if they take that first prize, you get counter catcher the next turn, and you basically just instantly win. You remove the hands, and you win.
But yeah, you're right, it's also good against stall, because you can just kill yourself.
You also get value against stall. And, I'm like, Sableye is not, like, a huge threat, from what I gather right now, so... Mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe something... worth looking into.
Yeah, I've seen some lists playing four of that, and most of them playing 2/2 still. But like the other Charmander part, besides the 70 HP, part of the reason it was good is because of the attack as well. Yes. That discards a stadium, and now that doesn't matter at all. So even a little bit less reason.
I think the stadiums are one really interesting part of this meta, which is that like all the Pokestop decks were like four stop because you wanted stop and play every turn. But I think, even though stop is so valuable and like nice to find on turn one, I think we see this in a lot of lists. You're like cutting back on stops because they just never get bumped. Like nobody's playing anything except stops, which I think is like pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, the only stadiums I see in decks are Artisan, Stop, and the random one of Collapsed in Zards and other things. Okay, so future hands, thumbs down. Number four, Lugia. Lugia is a deck I played a decent amount of games at the very beginning and haven't really touched it in more recently. It's still, like, it hasn't changed. I feel like the list is more or less solved already. It's just kind of like, do you want to play Lugia or not?
Yeah. Try to get as many evolutions as you can on turn two. And if you get enough, you always win, because the Chen Pao or the Chinchino uptrades everything, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. That's the thing. Like, Lugia feels almost impossible to beat with almost any deck if it gets going, and if it has like it has like 3-ish tiers of starts. Like, impossible to beat starts, it's mid starts where it's like it could win, but it had to read the win once or twice. And then you have it's completely like unplayable.
Vs or something, right?
What'd you say?
Or like bench too many Vs, miss a 22 whatever, right?
Yeah, or but it also has like, I don't know, 1 out of 5, 1 out of 6 times it's just like, oh, I drew 6 energy and a Minchino as my start.
Yeah, you just like don't hit the V star for like the first like 3 turns. You just always lose.
So, but like its matchups are like pretty. Well, if you take away that like 15-ish%, like its matchups are good.
If you get the good starts, it's good.
I wouldn't fault anyone for playing Lugia. Like, I mean, it's a solid.
No, I think it's a good call if you want to go for the jackpot.
Exactly. Number five is Lost Box. We saw in Japan this like the last couple of weeks of their like city tournaments, the League Cup esque events. Lawson like was the most winning deck, and I feel like here it's been like it's been okay. It's done well, but not like crazy well. It's not a deck that I've played very much. The couple games that I have played, I had this realization that Iron Hands takes a lot of energy to power up in a Lost Zone deck. Like, it's not like playing it in other decks.
I really like Lost Box. I'm a little bit biased. Last Sunday, I played my last Paradox Rift League Cup. And in that League Cup, I played against Dean Nesum twice, one in Swiss and one in Top Cut, which was best of three. So I ended up playing a lot against him. And Dean has been a guy who's been playing Lost Box this entire format. His list was absolutely sick. It was super sick. He was playing nine Switch cards. And I've carried that over. Heavy Switch card, Prime Catcher, 4-4-1. Mm-hmm. And it feels really good. You basically get like four comfies down on like turn one, turn two, and then you just shred your entire deck with that many Switch cards. And yeah, I was feeling inspired because Dean was absolutely showing me the sauce.
He's good. Dean's really good player.
Good man. Yeah, he's really good. And so yeah, I like the deck. I don't make it do the same thing. The way he addresses that issue with the Iron Hands is he makes it a priority. He did it in like three of the four games. He gets the Iron Hands turn one and he gets energy on it.
Interesting. And okay. Then so he's really preemptively going for it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and like, what other attackers are we playing? We're playing Roaring Moon, obviously. That card's really good.
Two Moon, Cram, Sableye. But like that in the hands, I was playing Gardevoir. So those are some lethal attackers, and I skimped on the Jirachi. So like, you know, he was like cram turn one, hands for two, boss Roaring Moon for two, and like, dude, he always hit the boss because he's like thinning his deck, and then he like pow pads, and there's like two Colress, and he has like Counter Catcher Moon, two Rod, two Gate, like he has everything in his deck. He prepared it super well. I only got him. I lost to him in Swiss. I got him on a brick in game one, and then we hit time because it was best of three, 50 minutes top cut, and he missed like a turn one hands, and then I beat him on turn three on prizes. I absolutely cheesed him, dude. He's gonna roll me. But yeah,
I'm looking at probably the list that he played because he got top 64 in Vancouver.
He's been running
like
the same thing all season.
Yeah. Okay, he played Dragonite, so now you play Raikou. You have to play Raikou instead of Dragonite in the new format, but otherwise it's like basically the same.
I just skipped it. That was one thing I was really impressed by Dean on, is like, myself included, I think a lot of Lost Box players, when you're building, you're like, oh, I have to add like something for like consistency, I guess, beyond just like playing an unholy amount of Switch cards. Like, you're like, oh, I have to cut some Switch cards for like Pokégears or something like that to try and like increase your chances of finding Colress turn one. He's just playing a ton of stops, and then like I think like max VIP, max Nest, max Switch cards, and he's like, I'm gonna find comfy turn one, then I'm gonna switch into it every time, and I'll just see what I get from there. And like I think that's a really, really nice idea, which is basically just to play for comfy more than Colress, whereas kind of counter to I think like conventional wisdom for the deck.
Yeah, makes sense. Did you end up winning the cup?
I did, yeah.
I didn't mention, I also won a cup the weekend of Vancouver.
So, nice.
Yeah. I played Tina. It's a good path to the peak send off.
Yeah, dude. I was thinking about making one of those, Twitter posts like, oh, one last ride with Gardy. I was able to hold off on that.
Speaking of Giratina, Giratina is the sixth most played deck for the new format on Play Limitless. I also have only played a couple games with Giratina in the new format. The lists are pretty much the same. It's like minus the four path plus four other cards from last format. Iron Leaves, obviously. And then other things that you can play if you want. I haven't really played the four Sealstone. It seems stupid to me, but
yeah, that is the craziest thing. My only experience with that is I hit one on ladder the other day, and as soon as the dude attached the seal stone, I was like, thank God.
I had a similar game playing, well, we'll talk about the Roaring Moon deck in a little bit, but I was playing the Roaring Moon deck, and he was setting up his Tinas, and then he played the Forest Seal Stone, and then he didn't use it for a turn. But then, like, then he did use it, and then I just, like, went Ancient Capsule on my Roaring Moon EX. I was like, what do you do now? I win the game now. Like, come on, bro.
Nice.
Yeah, it doesn't seem great to me. And the deck in general just seems, like, kind of okay to me in this format. Like, without Path, I think your Charizard matchup is probably unfavored. Maybe the leaves can make you, like, 50-50, but, like,
I think if you get the leaves, you should be fine.
That's not like, I don't know. I guess you delete two.
Deck's trash, though. Deck's trash. I was just talking about this with Edwin Arroyo, which is like, last format, the whole idea was like, you cut all of the turbo stuff and you put your consistency into the Tina. And this lets you save space so that you can add Pass and Roxanne and stuff. Yeah. And now, like, you don't have any compensation for going slower. Like,
right. Like, Roxanne by itself is, like, often not enough.
Yeah, and I mean, like, the Lost Zone decks can shove one Roxanne in and have, like, pretty much, like, the same level of disruption that you have at this point. And I just don't see what the compensation is for making your deck slower.
Yeah. I think, like, the Chi and Pav matchup is, like, it was already, like, not great, and now it's, like, a lot worse.
it's just terrible.
Yeah, it's really bad now. Like I said, Charizard's like whatever. Yeah, I don't know. Its matchups are not great. Number 7, we got Arceus Giratina. This deck seems terrible to me. I don't really have much else to say. Yeah.
Dude, I like it. You're like super favored into Zard. Maybe be Chenpao. Maybe, I don't know. It's Arceus. I don't think it's that good, but.
You can't be that favorite. I mean, if Zard goes first and just like gets the max belt and KOs you, you're like,
The max belt doesn't work on the Vs.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah. The Zard matchup is like super favorite in my experience. Like you have, even in that scenario, you get your Arceus gets hit 180, and you hit for 200, and then you get another KO with the next Arceus, and they still can't take a knockout because you're only up 2 prizes. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And then now you flooded your board with grass energy, and then the next turn you go Tina V-Star KO, and then you go Iron Leaves to finish, and it's like...
Yeah. Yep. Seems reasonable.
And then that's like in like your worst case scenario of like, they go turn to 180 before you get an attack.
Yeah. Okay. I agree. Then 8 and 9, we got the... Well, it's kind of... I know they're different decks, but let's just talk about them all at the same time. Great Tusk Mill, Snorlax, Pidgeot.
Yes.
This is your wheelhouse. I played a little bit of Great Tusk Mill. They're trash.
Yeah.
Why is Pidgeot trash?
Let's start with that. Consistency issue, dude. I think Pidgeot's matchup into future hands is absolutely horrid, which is like... I mean, it's hard to play the deck at that point, and like... All your matchups are just like so hard because if you whiff the turn 2 Pidgeot, you basically instantly lose. But even if you get the turn 2 Pidgeot, like the Prime Catcher helps decks be so aggressive, like, and all the decks are one hitting you except for Zard. That's like your like one always good matchup. Like they just go Prime Catcher KO your Pidgeot turn 2 every single time, and like that's hard to deal with. And like, you know, the Iron Hands decks, not decks, but the future one, it takes 3 prizes when it does it. Like it's hard to deal with that in my experience. So yeah, I've struggled to make Pidgeot work. I think the straight Snorlax version is much better. You get all the retreat lock and you get it without having to bench a Pidgeot that always gets turn 2 KO'd.
The Rotom is definitely more susceptible as well than it was before, but maybe it's fine.
Yeah.
I know some decks are playing Spirit Tomb, just kind of for the control matchup.
You just get cooked by Spirit Tomb.
Yeah, like most of the Lost Zone decks are playing it.
I think that's some other fiendish. I would not play Spirit Tomb. You can just beat them with the Prime Catcher.
Great Tusk Mill is the only one I've played a little bit with. It's okay. It's not terrible, but it's just like it's not very consistent. And like, it's like pretty often you're waiting until like turn 2 or turn 3 to even get your first mill attack off, which at that point is just too slow.
So. I think your list must be troll at that point, bro. I get it pretty consistently, but I mean, maybe that's why I encounter a different issue, which is that my deck literally does nothing else. And I mill 24 cards and then I lose.
Like, yeah, right. Yeah, and there's probably not a happy medium there where you like can go fast and have like a high power level.
Like adding options to the deck, all of them are supporter based. You want because you have to disrupt the hand somehow to make anything on board work. And once you go for the supporter base, like you basically like throw your turn away because you're no longer hitting the floor off the mill. So like. you're playing for this win condition the entire time, and then you throw a turn away to like pray for some disruption to work. It doesn't feel good at all.
Yeah. All right, just a couple more decks. Gardevoir is actually not terrible. It's better than I thought. The issue that I thought was going to be like the biggest issue is just the lack of level ball and finding Curlias. Like, I think your attacking options are, they're not great, but they're like good enough to be, they're good enough to be competitive in the format. But like the strength of Gardevoir is its engine and the Curlia engine. And without consistent and easy access to that, it's not worth playing at all. And the TM Evo engine is like better at doing it than I thought. So I think the deck is not terrible. I could see it doing decent. I could see some good players deciding to play it. The other issue is just like Lost Vacuum. How much Lost Vacuum is going to be played? It's really tough to beat Charizard if you... It's impossible to beat Charizard if you don't KO their Pidgeot. And even if you do KO their Pidgeot, the matchup is still like... You can lose it still. But it's like a 0-100 if you don't kill their Pidgeot.
Dude, I would never even play Drifloon. I think those Guardiolists have it in the wrong direction. Drifloon is like the worst attacker by far. I don't know how you ever get like sleep at night throwing that Bravery Charm on there and just being like, please don't play Lost Vac. Like, I'd play Lost Vac in all my decks. Lost Vac's amazing right now. Everything is cool. Good.
What do you play instead of Drifloon? Like, you need something.
I like Deoxys V-Star. I like Mew. Okay. I like Screamtail.
Would you play there's like the Mimikyu, right? That's like a worse Zacian. Do you play that?
Oh, that one? I haven't thought about
it's
it.
It's an EX. It's Mimikyu.
Yes, I remember now.
You haven't tried that?
Yeah, I have not thought about that at all. Maybe.
You need, if you're playing Deoxys, you probably play more energy than the other lists.
I wouldn't want to play all those energy. The Zacian didn't even feel that good anyway, like at the end of the format. I mean, I should think about it more, of course. But I'm playing one Fluttermane. I'm playing a Cress. Yeah.
Most decks aren't playing Cress. How many energy do you have?
I have like 9. Yeah.
Okay. I think most lists play... Well, it's either 8-2 split with the Vessel or 9-1 usually. Yeah. I feel like with Deoxys, you would want at least another 1 or 2, but maybe it's fine. What does Deoxys need to hit a big damage, like 5-6?
Nah, dude, it needs like 2, bro, because it does damage for both actives. Like,
how much does it do? 60 for each?
Yeah, 60 on both active for each energy on both.
So like, it's Charizard, right? That's the one that you really have to worry about. So you're getting.
Sure.
So you need 6 energy between the two of you. Okay, so it's only 4. That's not that bad. Okay. Yeah, I take it back. You're probably fine.
Yeah, the Deoxys is like super efficient.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah, that seems good. All right, and the last deck that I want to talk about was the Roaring Moon deck. That's another deck that I've played quite a bit with. It's a Roaring Moon EX, Roaring Moon Baby, and the Dunsparce. It's been pretty fun. It won an online tournament last week, and I've been tweaking the list a little bit. I think Baby Moon's just like pretty good card. Kind of reminds me of Baby Buzzwall, the Sledgehammer swing around one. It's not as good, but it reminds me of it.
So I think it might be better.
You think it might be better?
Ooh. I don't know. Yeah, I'm probably forgetting how good the Baby Buzzwall was. It was Baby like Buzzwall was really good. All right. It was really good, but it wasn't as dominant as Baby Moon feels like in taking over a game, in the sense that, like, you know, obviously the Sledgehammer was only good on one turn. I like when I play against these Baby Moon decks, they have like 4 Baby Moons on like turn 3, and I'm like, dude, this thing, like, these are just going to run through my board. Like,
yeah,
it's just, you know,
140 HP is like, it's like a really awkward number for a lot of decks.
It gets out of
the
hands, which is huge.
Yeah, it gets out of the hands
against Chen Pao.
Yep. That's huge against like the Lost Box decks. It's huge. They can get around it, obviously, by setting it up with Sableye Ninja, but it makes it much more annoying. Putting the capsule on the Baby Moon makes it pretty chonky. And it's just like, it just kind of hits the right numbers. Like, it hits enough that it can KO pretty much any one prize Pokemon without much difficulty. And then it can two-shot most 2-prizers. You know, the V-Stars, it starts to get a little bit tougher if it's really early in the game. And then obviously Charizard, you can't really two-shot it until later in the game. But like, yeah, they're pretty chunky and annoying to deal with for sure. There's like a lot of matchups you just win by going five roaring moons, five baby moons.
Yes, I mean, baby moon's insane. It's insane.
Not that hard to stream them with Sada and Dark Patch. So that deck's pretty fun. Crydon is definitely bait. I played a very little bit with that ancient box. Crydon sucks for sure. Cool. Any other decks you want to talk about?
The only reason that the reason you play Caridon is because it's an ancient card, and after you play four of all the ancient trainers, you have to move on to Pokemon. And this is a Pokemon that if you start it, it can attack on turn one without playing a switch card.
So. Yep.
It sucks.
It sucks, yeah. But it's an ancient card.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. That's its best treat. Huh. All right, any other decks you want to talk about?
Don't think so. Oh, you want to talk about Binette really quick?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We saw the Binette guy, Matthias. Yeah. He posted his list and said, like, this deck is broken. Don't play it at UIC.
The deck looks pretty good. I think it's really good. Yeah, I mean, you should know what you're doing when you play the deck. Don't play the deck if you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah. Do you think it beats Zard?
I'd add more Zard techs. I haven't really tested Binette at all this format. Mm-hmm. I'd add more Zard techs. I talked with Matthias a little bit about it. He thinks it beats like everything.
I mean, like, it just obviously it's like not super easy to find the Charmeleon, but if I feel like if they find Charmeleon relatively early,
you can't count on that. You just always have to assume that Hit Candy Zard, because like you get some win rate, sure, from, you know, hitting the aggro Burnett, which is great. But yeah, they do find the Charmeleon, and you go second a lot too.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah. And you don't hit heads on the Shuppet.
And you getting into the Shuppet's really hard as well, because you have to raw start it. You have to find the energy. There's like a lot that has to happen for you to hit the Binette before they get an evolve, and they're like, there's the Charmeleon threat, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, so you gotta do other stuff.
Mm-hmm. But you play a bunch of memory skip, that's the idea.
Sure. There's a lot of other decks I feel like that actually could do decently well. I think like the Gouging Fire deck looked cool. Lost Box Charizard always has a shot. Maybe someone cracked Raging Bolt. Like, there's a lot of potential, I think, in this format.
Dude, what would it take to crack a Raging Bolt? Like,
I don't know.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah, let's look at this Gabe Smart graphic. Right.
So.
Dude, he has a Venusaur EX there. Oh, dude, I love Venusaur. That card's lit.
I would very much have to look up what that does.
Yeah. It has 340 HP, and its ability is it heals 60 from one of your Pokemon. Hmm. So you get two of the balloons on those guys that give you for your treat, and then you go between them and you heal 120 a turn, 340 HP, and you also have like the heal from the Whimsicott. You know. Cool.
Max Potion Whimsicott. Yeah. That card. I played a couple games with Torterra. That deck is pretty bad.
But. Torterra, yeah. Yeah, no, dude, the walls, though, are really bad this format because Chen Pao and Lugia are like 1 and 2. So.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Not 1 and 2, but they're like serious meta contenders, and dealing with them is way too hard if it's not a primary strategy.
Yep. All right, well, it'll be interesting to see what happens. We will be back next week to talk about the results and where the metagame heads from there. Like, this weekend will be a very good indicator of where we're going.
And then Orlando.
Yeah, and then Orlando's right around the corner. So I think, like, there's some subset of players that are kind of, like, locked in on something, and they're just going to play it to Orlando no matter what.
Dude,
and
if you're locked in for Orlando, you're actually trolling.
Like, and then there's another, like, big subset of players that are, like, maybe they have, like, an idea. Maybe they have, like two or three decks they'd consider playing, and they're very much waiting to see what happens at UIC. I mean, Liam, I agree with you, but there's some people that, you know, they need to, like, have one or two decks that they're, like, all right, I'm going to play.
Yeah, you got to one-trick it, right? Ah, yeah, I got one-trick exactly. The entire season. Yep. Oh, my God.
I'm not going. If I was going, I'd either be playing Qian Pao or the Roaring Moon deck. I don't really, probably leaning towards Qian Pao, but I think the Roaring Moon deck's pretty fun too. Yeah. If you were glowing, Liam, do you have a thought of what you'd be playing?
For UIC?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd definitely be playing Baby Moon.
Baby Moon. Cool. All right. That's our episode. Catch us next week.